CBS News Special Report. The Supreme Court issues its ruling on presidential immunity, and President Biden calls it a decision that undermines the rule of law.
4 years ago, my predecessor sent a violent mob to the U.S. Capitol to stop the peaceful transfer of power. We all saw it with our own eyes. We sat there and watched it happen that day.
CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson says the justices are giving former President Donald Trump in his federal January 6th case substantial immunity, but not a total win.
For the things that are just for the president, for those things that are just within the president's ambit, absolute immunity. For official acts in general, at least presumptive immunity. For unofficial acts, no immunity.
CBS News has learned that former President Donald Trump is now citing that ruling in an effort to get Judge Juan Merchan to set aside the verdict in his New York criminal case. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Maryland Governor Wes Moore visited Wisconsin over the weekend to campaign for President Biden and rally black voters. Governor Moore asked Democrats to continue supporting the president, despite his rocky debate performance. According to a new CBS poll, 72% of registered voters do not believe Biden is mentally capable of serving another term. July 1st is National Postal Workers Day, a celebration of the job they do to deliver the mail. Postal workers provide a vital service, especially during big election years. Daniel Cortez is with the American Postal Workers Union.
Whether it be America's election mail or letters from grandparents, care packages to our service members overseas, vital prescriptions for our seniors and veterans, it's important to remember that all of that happens because of the dedication of the postal workers day in and day out.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff. And this is Civic Media News.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this Civic Media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of Civic Media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. A little bit to get to. We were on vacation last week, spent a little time with the family, a little time riding bikes, doing some fun stuff, taking a breather. And, you know, when we planned this vacation, who would have thought that there would be a presidential debate right dab smack in the middle of it? The earliest debate, I'm thinking, at least in my lifetime, probably ever in a presidential election. So who could have known a year ago that this was going to be the debate time? I'm told didn't go well. And look, potentially that's why they had an early debate. I'll be very clear. Guy had a bad night. The difference in the frame that's going around is Biden had a bad night, was sick. People have bad nights, but he's a good guy. He's a good man. I think he's a good leader. I think his vision for this country is right. And he's running against a guy who, not a good guy. If you actually paid attention to what Trump had to say and said it very well. Look, I give Trump credit for being able to deliver the message without being the raving lunatic that we've seen in the past. He was on message and doing the classic alternative reality. What we used to commonly call lying, he did that very well. And since CNN was doing no fact-checking, it just went out as if it was reality. And Biden was unable or didn't blow back on it. Now, should he be out There are the corporate media is ginning up this. Oh, immediately you should go. I'm not sure yet. I think Joe Biden will do what's in the best interest of the country because that's who Joe Biden is. Whereas I believe Donald Trump will do what's in the best interest of Donald Trump, not everyone else. So the decision, if Joe Biden is to step aside, will be his and his alone. Now, for everybody else, I'll be honest with you. I'm Team Biden, not because I love Joe Biden so much. I do love the man, good guy. But because of the policies that they've moved, because of the administrative people they've put into positions of power, Lina Khan, Jonathan Cantor, Julie Sue, Jennifer Abruzzo, down the list of worker-centric people who are doing the job of governance. For me, it's not just the one guy. It's the total package. I saw what Donald Trump did during his 4 years. I saw who he brought in. These were corporatists. These were people who made sure that their pockets were always going to be lined and working people were going to get the short end of the stick. And here's where we are. The reality is also this week, which got almost no attention, is the end of the Chevron doctrine by the Supreme Court, overturning decades of decided law. Chevron, as you may know, is a legal doctrine. The principle was established by the Supreme Court in the case Chevron USA versus Natural Defense Resource Council. This gives deference to smart people. The court goes, hey, did Congress address this specifically? Is this in the legislation? And if it's not, if it's something that, well, Congress couldn't foresee, you defer to the smart people. Because the court has to, under the Chevron doctrine, decide, did Congress address, did they speak to this precise question that's before us? If they did, then, well, it's their responsibility, not the agency's. It's what's written. But if it's not clear, it's ambiguous, then you defer to smart people. You know, the people who spend their lives working in these areas. You know, for instance, the EPA. I think I want, you know, scientists. I think I want people who, for their lives, who've studied, you know, whatever it is that's before the court. I think I want their opinion and their ability to enforce the rules instead of a judge in a robe who passed a law exam. And where we are now is, thank you, Supreme Court, corporate power now supersedes regulatory bodies. So as a kid growing up in Cleveland, the famous story about, you know, the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland back in the 50s that caught on fire because it was so badly polluted. The lake that I grew up with, Lake Erie, where the only fish I ever remember seeing were floating sideways looking up at the sky with one eye. For those who don't know, that's dead. Horribly polluted. It's because of the EPA, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the deference given to regulatory bodies to enforce and regulate that did this. This wasn't the act of benevolent corporations who care. No. This was a regulatory body. And look, a Republican, Richard Nixon, put into place the EPA and OSHA, things that protect we the people. I fear in 10, 15 years, what we're going to find is we're right back to rivers burning. Because we're going to start building stuff here again. And who's going to regulate what goes into our water, into our air? 9 people wearing robes sitting behind a desk? That's not what we should want. We should want better. In this Chevron case, this is a big deal. It got almost no attention because we were all focused on Joe Biden. And again, the Supreme Court got away with another one. Got away with another one. And the question I keep coming back to, you know, do we want more of what Trump brought us during his 4 years? Or do we want a vision of reshoring manufacturing, investing in this country, creating middle class, working class jobs and opportunities? I don't think Biden should resign. I don't think that the Democrats should lose their mind, but should talk about the vision for the future. It's my thought. And if Biden does decide that he wants to step down, the perfect replacement would be a Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton ticket. or Michelle Obama and Gavin Newsom. Something along that line. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, South Carolina Congressman Jim Clyburn, after the Thursday debacle, has come out and said that he is on Team Biden-Harris. He said if there's no Biden, he's going to be there for Harris. If there's no Harris, he's going to be there for Biden, because he is on, well, Team Biden-Harris. He's there for the both of them, or each one individually, or however that is. And he said, hey, look, Democrats, you got to stay the course and chill out. So taking the John Fetterman route of chill out and stop losing your mind. And here to share some thoughts on, should Democrats be losing their mind over Thursday's performance? Here to share some thoughts, I've asked my good friend Bob Ney to come talk with us, former Ohio congressman, political analyst, and someone who's, I don't know, run an election a time or two, might have some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So, did you see the thing on Thursday?
Oh, yeah. Every painful minute of it. Yes, I did. You know, I was in debates myself for 24 years, and I've coached many people on debates, and I've worked with campaign staffs on debates over the years, just about basically almost every level except presidential. They don't listen to my opinion on that. But I watched the debate. Look, no way to sugarcoat the performance of the president. No way. If you look at substance, then you have some arguments that unfortunately don't reach the public. I had a friend of mine, she called me today. But Donald Trump said this. I know. But Donald Trump said that. I know. But Donald, it doesn't matter.
Right. Lied 50 times.
The president's performance was so off track, the president couldn't get back to what he needed to do to knock Donald Trump off his square. I must also say this is one of the most contained Donald Trumps I've ever seen, number one. Number two, he did the mantra. When I used to debate, I would have my two talking points. I usually try to keep it to two. So if I'm asked a question and I'm hit earlier in the debate, I'm going to go back to, you know, if the question is about abortion, I'm going to answer it and then go back to, but you know what? The balanced budget. But you know what? Immigration. But do you know what? Education. I'm going to go back and I'm going to hit those. Trump did it.
Right.
Asked about abortion. Well, let me say something about immigration, or let me say something about, you know, the not balanced budget, the economy, because neither one of them balanced the budget. So the economy. So he did that. He was, I don't know, in a mantra on that. Obviously, yeah, he listened to somebody for a change. Now,
he had a bit of message discipline. Yeah, I mean, that came through. Now, granted, it was lies. I mean, this is a guy who I think would lie when the truth would be better. But he was on the lie. It was there. He hammered on it.
Right. And here's, on a fact check basis, there were two on the president. One, the price of insulin, which he said $15 is $35. Okay, that's one. And the second was the loss of any troops during his time. When you look at Donald Trump's fact-checking afterwards, of course, the debate was set up that fact-checking didn't matter until afterwards, which doesn't matter the way the debate ran, if that makes sense. If you look at Donald Trump's fact-checking, wow, I mean, we can just go down the litany. Unfortunately, the president couldn't get back to that. Now, okay, the aftermath of it. Number one, if I was in charge of something and I'm a Democrat, I want to just go, before they come to the panel of experts, I want to slap them all once and say, listen to me, because here's what you say. Very clear and simple. You say he had a bad night. He has another debate coming. He had a bad night. But it has to get into the, well, maybe we'll replace him. Well, first of all, there's nobody under the sun that's going to be able to replace Joe Biden unless Joe Biden wants to be replaced.
Right.
And unless Jill Biden agrees with that. That's number one. So they might as well drop the discussions. And have there been discussions? No, you know, we're not discussing that. That's not on the table. Now, the recent story, I think it was this morning or yesterday, about getting rid of campaign staff. No, no, and no. Once you start doing that, then the media seizes upon, oh, the campaign's in trouble.
Yeah, you throw a chum in the water. No, it's bad.
Where are they from? Remember when Trump got rid of Lewandowski, who did they hire? Paul Manafort. Can you say Russian? Okay. You know, George Bush was attacked over and over. Get rid of Karl Rove. Nobody likes Karl Rove. He didn't do it. You got who you got, and you stay with what you have. So I think everybody needs to just, when the media says, well, what about this? Stop it. No, I'm not part of that. No, we're not. No, we're going on with things. That's the only point that they have to do right now, unless, you know, president wants to change. Now, putting my mind into the Trump campaign for a second, to be candid, because that's what we, you and I and these shows are about, to be candid about it, I'm going to make this, it's Donald Trump versus Kamala Harris now, because her numbers are worse. I'm gonna throw that out there. I'm gonna hit, the Trump campaign is going to hit. It's very clear your decision is Kamala Harris president of the United States or not. That's what they're gonna do.
I think we're already starting to see some of that trickle out, because it is the common, it is the chess move. It is the next move. Sure. Because if you've already taken Biden out of the equation, which I think they've done, and which I think is kind of a mistake. I mean, I saw his rally the next day. He was up. He was on message. I like what he said. When you fall down, when you get knocked down, you get back up. I agree with that. And we'll see how this plays out. But you're right. I think this, it's good for the next month. It's going to be all about Kamala.
Sure. And the Biden campaign has to, you know, stay to the issue. Just, they've got to, no matter what. Because the media, and you know this, the corporate media loves the next story that makes them a dollar.
Yep.
You know
that. Oh, absolutely. It's all about the clickbaiting. But here's the thing.
Like yours are the real deal, but the corporate media is going to look for the next, and the, what the dollar is going to be is, oh, was there a secret meeting? What was said? Is they replacing the president? What's the campaign staff say? The system, the Democrat system, the DNC, the money people, everybody, they have to move on. He had a bad day. You move on. Keep going.
But here's the thing, and this is the weird part. Over the last couple of days, if you've been watching the polling, there hasn't been a bump. Trump didn't get a bump. You know, Biden clearly didn't get a bump. But there hasn't really been. Is there a poll that you've seen where there's been a significant move? Because I think voters are where they are. Look, I'm going to vote for Joe Biden regardless, because it's the policies. It's Jennifer Abruzzo at the NLRB. It's Julie Sue at the Department of Labor. It's Jonathan Cantor at the DOJ. It's Lena Khan at the Federal Trade Commission. It's those people who are doing the work that working people need to get done. Those are the people that I want in those positions. So look, you know, Biden Harris, I'm thrilled with the people that they've surrounded themselves. So I'm not changing. And I think on the other side, you have the red hats who want to go back to the days of the, you know, the craziness that we saw over the 4 years of Trump. So I don't know that there's a lot of movement. Are you seeing something different?
No, I agree. I think there's a couple of significant things. And I said this before on your show before the debate. If I was running the Biden campaign, would have insisted he not bring up convicted felons. I would have insisted on it. And I'll tell you why. I ran against Congressman Wayne L. Hayes, who had the Liz Ray sex scandal, the secretary that couldn't type, and And a lot of people don't remember that, but very powerful congressman. He resigned Congress, came back in this scandal, in this shame, and he was elected state rep. And he was 69 years old. I was 26 running against him. They produced a commercial, the Republicans, and I looked at the commercial and I held my breath. Congressman Wayne Hayes, sex scandal, resigned from Congress in disgrace, blah, 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 too old. And I'm like, kill the commercial. That's not running. Everybody in the district knew he resigned from that. Everybody, right? They elected him. So what am I doing? You know. Yeah. And the Trump thing was the same. The bump that Biden got off the conviction was a hair, a hair. Hillary got more off the grab-em tape at the time, four points. It was a hair. So that's one thing. Now, and the bump, and I've been looking fiercely for these, you know, these polls. The bump is the same type of thing in reverse that Trump's getting off this. Here's the part of that debate where I think Biden's campaign could be in trouble if the Democrats respond that, well, you know, now they're less intrigued by their candidate, less supportive, so they may stay home. That's the bump I would watch, not the bump Trump gets, because I don't see one right now. No. But I would watch very closely if I'm the campaign to look at the base, make sure they're energized, make sure you get them out the vote. That's what it's going to be about.
Which means you got to talk about the things that he's done and the vision for the future. I've been saying this all along, and I think that's the most important part of it. But what do you make of this? Because you're right. I mean, you know, Trump didn't take – there were no consequences for the grabber by the you-know-what tape. There are no consequences for the 34 felonies. What every other retail politician gets crushed over, this guy seems to have been the Teflon Don. What does that say about, I guess, our society? What's it say about Republican voters?
I think if we're candid about all of this, that we have two candidates. And I served with Joe Biden in Congress. And he's, you know, I'm not one of those Biden haters. He was a horrible senator. He did a lot of good things. And if you needed to reach out to the other side of the aisle and you had Joe Biden, wow. You know, that was a blessing, really. In the Congress, everybody knows that, and the way he ran the Foreign Affairs Committee and the Judiciary. So, you know, having said that, though, this is a different Biden, a different era. So we have a candidate that is lackluster, and then you have another candidate that's, you know, off the spindle. And so you have two candidates that, being candid about it, the vast majority of Americans are like, oh, please, is there anyone else? Now, yes, both candidates have their, you know, ingrained supporters, and Trump has fierce supporting, loyal supporters. But in general, if magically polling could kick in and pick different candidates, they're both out, you know? So I think what's happened here is that people are ingrained towards either candidate. So no matter what either one of them does, they just continue at this point where they're locked into a battle that, Rick, I mean, this could be decided by 500 votes in some congressional district.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the problem for me. It's the down ballot stuff that I'm concerned about as well, because quite frankly, Republicans should and honestly must lose the House for as poorly as they performed over the last 2 years. And I fear the Senate races are setting up in a way that, you know, if Biden doesn't have the coattails to pull some votes in, could end up with Republicans controlling, you know, not just the Senate and the White House, but potentially the House as well.
Yes, because take my home state of Ohio, the state, you know, you were raised in. Take that home state number. It's yes, Trump's winning, but it's less. It's less than it was. And you have a competitive race with Sherrod Brown, the incumbent senator, and Dan Marino, who's running against him. The Senate, I mean, if I've got to put some money on this today, I'm going to go barely with the Republicans winning. And a week ago, I'm going with the House going Democrat because the Republicans have created a circular firing squad. Now, they've tempered it, as you see, in the last month or so. It's been tempered. Marjorie Taylor, three names, somehow has been corralled. They put a shock collar on her. I'm not sure what they did. But she's been a bit contained of not trying to throw the speaker out for right now. She'll wait till the day after the election.
Right.
But having said that, I'm still going to put the House in the losing column. But Now, with the debate and the down ballot, I don't know. Either way, it's going to be a small margin of whoever controls that house. But yes, I think people are going to start looking at the down ballot to see statistically how it's going to affect these races.
No, it's definitely going to be interesting. But, you know, let's say that Biden does decide that it's time to step aside. And I'm not saying that he will. I do believe Joe Biden will do what's in the best interest of the country. And if he believes the best interest of the country is under his hand, then I think he will do that. But, you know, is there someone out there that you go, hey, this could be a viable replacement?
Well, I think there are several, but I'm going to go back to what I said last year and what I said in February on all the stations I did. That if Joe Biden got out of this election, and I said this continuously this year, if Joe Biden got out of this election early, Donald Trump, I argued, would have gotten out of the election because a new person into the system makes a wide difference. It makes a difference on the 18 to 34 vote, which Biden has lost. It makes a difference on the Latino vote, the African-American vote, because Trump has taken 22% of the vote in the swing areas. And the independents and the people who are, you know, they don't like Trump at all. They don't like Biden. What are they going to do? Maybe they're going to stay home. A new candidate, I argue, if Biden had got out, would have put Trump's numbers to the point where maybe right now the Republicans would say, you need to get out of this race. They won't do that now, but they may have done that. That was my speculation. That's why I said Trump may not run, but that was based on I honestly thought Biden may get out early in 2024 is what I was kind of thinking. So a new candidate puts a whole new perspective. Now, if you have a new candidate, you have to have two new candidates because you cannot have a new candidate and Kamala Harris is that candidate. You can't do that. That's not a switch that would be acceptable. So any other new candidate, I think, would – and I don't know statistics, but it would put a change in the numbers. It would have to. President Biden has lost certain numbers that a fresh Democrat could bring back into the fold.
Yeah, I said earlier, I think a Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton ticket, that would make the right crazy, and it would energize a lot on the Democratic side.
Well, Michelle Obama, Newsom ticket.
You know, no, I mean, you throw the Hillary in there just to make the right crazy. But, you know, you could put in there Newsom or Gretchen Whitmer or sure. Sherrod Brown, even though Sherrod Brown's staying running for Senate because you need him in the Senate, because I don't think anybody else wins a Senate seat in Ohio but Sherrod.
Not Sherrod Brown.
But, you know, you're somebody, you know, and, you know, clearly we will see how this plays itself out. Final thought, though. What do you see going into the convention? Do you see potentially a shift? Do you see them staying the course? I know there's a lot of chatter. What's your thought?
They have to stay the course. The Democratic Party at this point in time cannot try to have an open convention where you debate staying with the president or having another candidate. They can't afford that now.
Well, they can't have an open convention because the delegates are already decided, right?
Well, yes. Now, some people are talking about an open convention. Delegates are committed either ethically or legally. Depends on your state. All right. Now, here's the open convention thought. I know where they're going with this. Those who are talking about it, I know where they're going with this. They want a basically rebellion where a committed delegate, let's say I'm a delegate at large and I'm for Biden and I've committed, I ran that way. Well, and if I'm at large in Ohio, I'm a superdelegate. But let's say I ran for Biden in one of the counties. I'm legally for Biden. I could, however, start to say I don't care what I'm legally for. I may not cast my vote. If you start to have this type of rebellion, it brings that whole discussion up front where they try to change the rule of the convention. Now.
Yeah, that ain't going to happen. That's a loser. Just as you're trying to explain it, my mind is going, that's a loser.
Right. Well, it's about as viable as the plot of the guy that wanted to be Attorney General of the United States. Was it Clark? I can't remember who, that brought this all up to Trump. You know, we can throw out the Attorney General and put me in and and refuse ballots. It's about as plausible as that was. So yes, it's not. And my point to answer your question is this: unless Joe Biden decides to step out, there should be no discussion at the convention about anything except the nomination of Joe Biden.
There you go.
And if he doesn't step out, that's what the convention's about, and they need to put an iron fist down on that one.
There you go. You heard it here. Our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, as always, great stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? Should this be the way things go? Should we be even talking about it? I don't think so. Especially not to the corporate-controlled media. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Peach Schwabba.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Showers and a few thunderstorms around in the overnight. Gusty south to southeast winds. And by daybreak, temperatures will be in the middle 50s. Shower and storm chances continue into Tuesday. Some of the rain locally heavy. Afternoon highs will warm to the lower 70s. Currently 62 degrees.
The big winners are in for the Scotty Summer Contest.
Exciting. Let's listen to the calls.
Hi, who's this?
It's Tori.
You're one of our grand prize winners.
All right, man. Great to hear this morning.
We got some good news for you.
Okay.
You are one of our grand prize winners.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome.
Winning is fun. Just ask Tammy from Baraboo and Tori from Kewaunee.
Thank you. That's great.
Listen for future chances to text and win on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the question, are we going to get an impeachment for Christmas? Will that be what the Republicans give America? They got nothing else. There are no policies. There's nothing to help feed the children, nothing to get homeless veterans shelter, nothing to solve the debt. Literally nothing. There's nothing there. So the only thing I think they can give we the people for Christmas is an impeachment inquiry, not an actual impeachment. No, they don't have the evidence for that, but an inquiry. Would that be an acceptable Christmas present? And here to share some thoughts on, do we want impeachment inquiry for Christmas? That's why I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. So you think inquiry for Christmas, would that be a suitable gift for the American people since clearly nothing else?
Well, now that I think about it, it kind of sounds like something that would be a Festivus event, you know, because there's the airing of grievances as part of Festivus.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking more of kind of like, since Mike Johnson is a theocrat, this could be like a Hallmark kind of themed inquiry.
You know, possibly, but I feel like, there's no love in that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about the Hallmark movies is you gotta have love. There's gotta be a kiss at the end.
Oh, we're gonna get kissed, all right. It's gonna be a lot more than kissed. If they get what they want, and this is the scary part in all this, this inquiry is not about Biden doing anything because they clearly have nothing. I'm looking at what was the one lawyer? You wrote a story on a lawyer going, yeah, it's gonna be an unfortunate affair. I think was the quote.
Yeah, like that's the thing is that so we talked to a couple of Republicans on the Hill this week, and they are kind of all over the place. Like they can't really figure out whether it's a real impeachment or not really an impeachment. Like it seems like a choose your own adventure novel, like where the inquiry, which to me sounds like what Kevin McCarthy introduced in September, you know, there are half of the Republicans that we talked to who were like, no, this is a legitimate inquiry. Like, this is not, who was it? Mario Diaz-Balart was like, this isn't like those other two votes we had. This is a legitimate inquiry. Whereas Tom Bacon was like, look, it's just an inquiry. Like, this isn't real impeachment. They don't have the votes for that.
No, I mean, like, but here's the thing. This is why words matter. And this is why having people who know what a dictionary is kind of matter, and why definitions matter. I mean, you get the first part, and I know Republicans love the first part of every sentence. Thou shalt not infringe on, you know, the right to bear arms. Well-regulated militia, no, we're not going to see that. But, you know, this impeachment, impeachment, inquiry, not sure what that means. We'll get rid of that. So this is what I think that they're stuck on. This is an impeachment, payback, retribution. This is the MAGA world going, we're going to make dear leader happy.
And I think some of the Freedom Caucus members have been open about that, where they're like, yeah, this is all about payback. but I mean, even then, there are the members who are like, oh gosh, who was it? Let me see. I have it written down just for you. It was Bacon again, who said, we can't have revenge impeachment. It's not good. It doesn't work in a marriage either. You just need a little bit more information into his relationship than I've ever wanted.
Is that why he's not running for re-election?
What kind of crazy stuff are you doing in your house, man? Like, well, you're just making text mixes some of your dude.
I don't know if you've been looking at some of the Republican leadership people around the country. I mean, you look at the couple in Florida. There's a lot of repression on that side of the aisle.
I guess the major question, so the reason this is an inquiry and the reason they're pushing a lot of this forward is the Republicans are saying, look, the White House is basically clammed up and they're not giving us what we're asking for. But what they're asking for is they want to interview every single member of the Biden family, every single member of the White House staff, all of the campaign staff, anybody who worked for the vice president. I mean, like, it is such a broad, it is an inquiry in search of an investigation for an impeachment.
Right.
Is basically what it is. And there's nothing, because they don't have anything, they're looking for something. And at some point, you just have to be like, this isn't a legitimate impeachment. And until you guys want to actually vote on an impeachment, yeah, like, this is a waste of our time.
No, it's a fishing.
So I wonder, like,
it's a fishing exposition.
I wonder if this is going to end up in court, right? Because you could take this to court and just be like, well, they voted on an inquiry. There's nothing in the Constitution about an impeachment inquiry. It pretty much, you know, lines out what an impeachment is and how the process works. And that's not what they're following.
Yeah, we don't have the evidence yet. But it's there. And that falls onto this belief culture. You know, they've sold people on the idea that we've got the evidence, and they don't. Because if they had it, guess what? They would have impeached him already.
Yeah, that's the thing. And, you know, I think one of the members said something about how, like, oh my God, have you seen some of the stuff that they found out? Like, Joe Biden said that he wasn't taking any money from Hunter Biden. And it's like, well, he said he wasn't taking any money from China through an intermediary. Now, he did buy his son a truck, and his son paid him back, you know, the bank of dad, right? And so there are all of these checks that Hunter Biden wrote to pay his dad back for this 2018 pickup when Biden wasn't even in office. And it's just they're so desperate that they're searching through old records, you know, trying to find stuff they've already gone through and already released, hoping they can find something else that they, or another way of framing it, or, you know, whatever. It's just, there's nothing there.
No, there's, and you've known that there was nothing there from the beginning. And this is what I said from the start. I'm not going to pay a lot of attention to it, because if they had evidence, they would have moved on it. This is clearly just a fishing expedition. Because if there were a straight line from Hunter Biden doing whatever he was doing to Joe Biden, they'd be all over this. And I know Joe Biden isn't that stupid to get himself in the middle of that.
And I would say it's not even a fishing expedition. It's the drive to the service station to get the bait for the fishing expedition. Like, this.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, it's so many steps ahead. Like, it's not even, like, you haven't even gotten the beer yet, right? Like, for the fishing expedition. That's how far ahead this is.
Yeah, well, the only beer they've got is non-alcoholic. Yeah, I get you. But here's the thing. I've got people who are saying, you know, Joe Biden's going to jail. And I'm looking around. The only people who seem to maybe going to jail are, well, Rudy. I mean, Rudy. Rudy, a guy who... How far has this guy fallen from America's mayor, from the top, you know, cop prosecutor, to now probably, or at least he fears, going to spend the rest of his life in jail after the laptop thing? Thoughts?
So I didn't think that Rudy, I honestly wasn't sure if Rudy was actually going to go to jail, but the more that this is unfolding and, you know, the poorer that Rudy gets, you know, they basically put a lien on his Palm Beach house. Like, he can't pay his lawyers. And Rudy, I think you're right. Like, I think he's never going to be able to actually pay for any of the restitution, for any of the things that he's found guilty of. And so I think there may not be another option other than throw the dude in jail.
And that would be such poetic justice. That, because I don't think Trump spends a day in jail. And I've got a lot of people who are saying, no, you're wrong. He's going to be in pinstripes. He's going to be in an orange jumpsuit. I'm going, I just don't see it. Somebody's going to go to jail. And I think Rudy's part of it. And I found it interesting that his lawyer, his own lawyer, is saying, you know, he never shuts up. What was the quote? My client, as you saw last night, likes to talk a lot, unfortunately. Yeah, the guy never shuts up. And that's what a little lubricant will do for you.
There was a couple of times in the trial where, and it wasn't just when he was interviewing Shamos, it was when he was doing his opening, when he was talking to the judge, like several moments throughout the course of the trial where Rudy's lawyer seemed like he maybe wasn't actually working for Rudy anymore. And I was like, what is happening? This is really not good for you. And I don't know if it's because he, you know, again, like, can't pay his lawyers, or, you know, if his lawyer's basically just phoning it in at this point.
Well, that's a question maybe, for me. That's a question that I have. Who is paying his lawyers? And is it, as we've seen, you know, some other people say that, you know, when the Trump world was paying the legal fees, they weren't really, you know, worried about the client that they were supposed to represent, as opposed to the client that was paying them to represent the client that they weren't really representing? Could that be part of this?
Well, Cassidy Hutchinson went into some great detail about what happened between her and her Trump lawyer. And that was all paid for, not directly from Trump, of course, but through some kind of like legal fund. I don't even know if it was a nonprofit or a super PAC or what it was. And I don't think she knew either. But, you know, all of the stuff that Rudy's had to do has been up to his own cash. And so he's had, I think it was like two or three attorneys who were working for him on another related case that dropped him because he couldn't pay their bills. And so, like, I don't know if this is one of those things where he is getting somebody to volunteer their time or... But I don't think that this is as a result of, you know, any money that Trump is spending, because he's already kind of, you know, said, well, I'm going to host this fundraiser for you. And I don't know how much they raise, but I guarantee you it's not the millions of dollars that he needs to pay off the bills that he's already got and the bills that he's got coming.
So does he at some point, you know, become indigent and end up with a public aid defense attorney? Does he end up with a public defender?
You know, I kind of wondered that because, I mean, especially after all those other people quit. I did a story, though, it seems so long ago, but I think it was just a couple of months ago where his fiance showed up with like a pretty expensive looking rock on her finger. And it's like, you just had a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago for legal fees. Did you just spend that on a ring?
Might as well. You probably don't have a lot of time left. And speaking of going to jail, I see George Santos is making the rounds, you know, with a nice did a little purse toting around.
He did like some interview with somebody, and there were pictures taken of him, and he had like this little box purse looking thing, and that's what everybody else was talking about. I was very excited about like the blue velvet double breasted jacket he was wearing, because I feel like my fashion is sort of like a gay man, you know, like, especially if there's glitter involved. But I'm like, oh, I would totally wear that, because then you could just sort of like pet your sleeve all day and be like, this is lovely. But yeah, I don't want to.
You spend all day feeling that. Yourself up over it. Okay, I get it. I get it.
True. We, in high school, I used to wear clothes that were based off of touch, and I used to call them feel me shirts, because I could walk around and be like, oh, feel me, feel me. That is who I used to be as a child.
Okay.
But George Santos has, I don't know if you noticed, but he has become like the biggest ticket on the internet, where he's making like $100,000 a week now off of cameo appearances, including from some Democratic members of Congress. They're using him to mock other Republicans in Congress. And I mean, if that's how he makes his living, and if he can do that from prison, then good on you, George, or whatever your name is.
And maybe he'll get a reality show of his own.
That, you know, so New York passed this thing this week. The New York Supreme Court said that the Democrats are allowed to change the maps for the election, so they can re-decide the congressional, you know, basically there's going to be a bunch of congressional races that are up for grabs now that weren't necessarily before.
Right.
So George Santos actually tweeted that out, and he was like, yeah, there's probably going to be six Republicans that are going to have to join me on cameo trying to make some money. And I thought, man, instead of housewives, like house members of New York, you know, and that have like all the ex-members basically like, you know, arguing and bickering with each other and drinking with Rudy Giuliani and being sad, pathetic old men. I mean, it's basically the same as the Housewives, but with worse fashion.
I can't say that I would watch it, but I'm sure there's someone out there who would be paying attention to that. And maybe they could all do it from a prison cell, of which I still don't think, you know, Trump is going to be part of, even though I'm told that a judge has made it clear that Trump could be put in prison. Is that right?
Yes, that was like the highlight of the week, where basically Judge Tanya Chutkan said, look, you're not above the law whenever it comes to crimes or punishment. And that is basically what Trump is appealing to the Supreme Court, where he's saying, no, I have this presidential immunity. I am above the law. And I, you know, nobody really thinks that it's actually going to work, but that's his argument. And so that'll be a really fun case to kind of look at if the Supreme Court is going to shoot down this idea of, well, he's not necessarily above the law, but is he above punishment?
We will see. And finally, I got to get your thoughts on, I saw Ann Coulter. And I got to tell you, when Ann Coulter is on the right side of an issue, I don't know, there's something wrong there. But she has... she has come out and said that, you know, the pro-life movement has gone from compassion for the child to cruelty to the mother and child. And I couldn't agree with her more. And I'm not an Ann Coulter fan by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, like they say, a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while. And here's this nut.
That's kind of the weird thing about Ann Coulter is ever since Donald Trump came around, she's sort of evolved into something completely different and has been more willing to attack Donald Trump and attack the direction of the Republican Party. And when it comes to issues like what happened in Texas with the woman who basically was going to watch her fetus either die before birth or be born and die a painful, excruciating death in front of her, you know, the Supreme Court in the state basically said, look, you didn't really make a case that this could, your doctor didn't make a case that this could kill you as well. And what was interesting in their decision, though, is that they also wrote that decisions like this should not be in the hands of the judiciary or the legislature either. It was a very bizarre kind of case where they were sort of all over the place. And you have to wonder, like, is this necessarily about, you know, did the doctor fail to make the case enough for this court case, or is it just that you know, the Supreme Court of Texas was trying to weasel their way out of a difficult decision that would probably hack off their attorney general.
No, but this is right. I mean, this should not be something that is decided by a bunch of guys in a legislature or on a court or any of this. This is none of their business.
And yet they still block her from being able to, you know, abort the fetus.
And that's the thing that gets me as well.
Same.
If they're going to take this position that it shouldn't be ours, don't you err on the side of extreme caution as opposed to, I don't know, I'm struggling with how they did this and why they did it, but also the outcome.
Absolutely. And I think, too, because this has now been advertised or you know, promoted that she sought an abortion out of state, you know, part of the Texas law is about, you know, these whole bounty hunters being able to try and come and arrest people. And, you know, are they going to charge her? Are they going to try and charge, you know, an out-of-state doctor? Like, there are all kinds of very strange laws that have been passed through a bunch of these red state legislatures, and none of them have really been tested in the courts. And this is actually a case where it may very well end up before the Supreme Court, and they're going to have to say, they're going to have to choose who dies. Is it, you know, are you going to die? Or, you know, is it okay to abort the fetus, or are you both going to die?
How about we go after the legislature?
Right.
Crazy times we're in. And look, this kind of stuff is not just Texas. We're seeing this kind of stuff ending up in red states across the country. And this is the thing that people like Ann Coulter, this was predictable. And maybe you'll come with me on this little journey. But, you know, I've been saying for probably all 18 years of doing this show that the Republicans want to overturn Roe. They want women barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen, blacks in the field, gays in the closet. This is the goal. So why would any of those groups ever vote for a Republican, knowing that that's where they want to take it? And the thing that gets me is the people like Coulter and other women on the right are, oh, I didn't know. Oh, this is too bad. This is too much. You knew this is what they were going to do.
That's the thing, is I feel like this is something that Democrats and that liberals have been talking about for a really long time, that this is not about abortion. This is about controlling women. And every time I feel like we've made that case, Republicans are like, oh, you're being hysterical. And they downplay this idea that that's what it was really about. Now that that moment has presented itself and there is actual evidence of that, now they're sort of stuck in this position where they're like, oh, crap, we thought this was, you know, not something that would really happen. Yep. And now it is. And so they're having to figure out, like, what do we do? What do we do? And now so much of the population, people who are, you know, avidly pro-life, are finding out that, no, it turns out if you believe that women deserve to make their own choices, that means you're pro-choice. You personally might be pro-life in your decision, but if you think that it shouldn't be pushed on someone else, I hate to inform you, but that means you're part of the tribe now.
There you go. As always, Sarah, appreciate the time. I wish you the happiest of holidays. We will see you in the new year. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Have an awesome holiday. All of the holidays. Every one of them. There Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, and New Year.
There you go. Thanks so much. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast. You'll find ours back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1995. That was the day machinists at Boeing ended their 69-day strike. 33,000 workers won increased pay and health benefits. They also won job protections against subcontracting. Contractual clauses against subcontracting were important, especially given the fact that NAFTA had just been passed 2 years earlier. The contract specified that the union be given 3 months' notice regarding any plans to subcontract out work. It also incentivized keeping work in-house by calling for increased benefits to laid-off workers and mandatory retraining and re-employment of workers displaced by subcontracting. These provisions came after IAM members rejected 2 previous contract offers. They were furious at the initial demands for concessions, even as Boeing executives were awarded multi-million dollar stock options. At the time, the IAM and its members lauded this as a total victory. For a few years, Boeing abided by the contract they signed. Subsequently, Boeing bosses have routinely violated their agreements. Many of these provisions were lost in the 2002 contract and then recaptured in 2008. But the next contract negotiations witnessed a renewed fight for job security. Over the past 2 decades, Boeing workers have seen massive layoffs, subcontracting, pension freezes and phase-outs, and relocation of their work, all while the company rakes in billions of dollars in profits, gets lucrative tax breaks and subsidies, and has close to 5,000 back orders for planes. Subcontracting clauses are important, but can only work when they are enforced. Victories like the winning strike in 1995 can serve as a reminder for workers today that if they stand together in solidarity, they can win better wages, hours, and conditions at the bargaining table.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, reminder, Saturday, December 16th, the good folks at the Working People's Podcast are going to be hosting a 12-hour live stream at their website. And this live stream is going to be a fundraiser. And as we talked about the other day, this fundraiser is going to be designed to help the folks in East Palestine. And we've talked about this before. The fact that our news media, well, they've kind of forgotten all about the folks in East Palestine. They've completely forgotten about these folks. And sadly, what has to happen is individuals like Maximilian Alvarez, they are out there going, hey, we haven't forgotten. We need to step forward. And the good folks there at the Working People's Podcast, they are going to do this live stream. And the hope is that raise some money, move in a direction to make Christmas brighter and happier for the families in East Palestine. You can find this at their website, the Working Pod website, the Real News Network's website, therealnews.com. They're going to be, I guess, posting this as part not as a part of the Real News, but as part of the podcast. So where you can donate, you can chip in, you can help out, you can show the world that we still care about each other. I will be doing part of the live stream with the folks at the Working People's Podcast. And look, this to me is another one of those examples of corporate greed, of slap a little window dressing, make some nice, and then leave the real external costs on the backs of individuals, on the backs of the taxpayers. We talked with one of the residents from East Palestine, and it was one of those moments where you go, how is it possible that we've allowed this to happen? How is it that we've allowed the moneyed interests to get away with the stuff that they've gotten away with? And you heard the story from Chris Albright, who was talking, look, he's got health issues. There are people, his friends and neighbors and family, they've got health issues. There's stuff going on. And, well, Norfolk Southern, the rail company, they're kind of just, they're I guess, doing the minimum that they have to do. I guess they did build a park. Yeah, I guess they spent $25 million building a nice park, which I don't know is all that great if you can't breathe, how much running around you're going to do. But, this is one of those things where you go, just in time for the holidays, there's an opportunity to reach out to a community to help them to get through this tough time. And I'm all in favor of helping them out. And we're going to do our best to do just that. Therealnews.com is the website. under the podcast heading. You will find the Working People's Podcast, which is where they will be streaming. Also from, I guess, their YouTube channel, the Working People's Pod YouTube channel, the live stream. And like I said, a way to donate. All the money going to go to the people in the community who have kids to make sure that those children have a happy, Merry Christmas and a holiday season that can be remembered and remembered positively. So good on them. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, as always.
Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickssmithshow.com. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.